There is perfect timing. So one of those are a lizard snapping up a butterfly. Not sure what the other one is there. The stork isn't in it. There was a on this picture with the kid holding up above there, there was a stork flying over, so it looked like the stork was dropping down the... Yeah. There's perfect timing. There is a time when the timing is perfect, though, and that time is when it is God's timing. And today, as we look at the story of David, we're going to begin to understand how David realizes that he needs to wait on God's timing. So we're in the short series on David, and God has chose David to be king of Israel. He has the prophet Samuel anoint him, even while there is another king. The other king is Saul. Saul has been rejected by God because he has not obeyed God's commands. So David is coming on the scene. He knows that the future means he will reign as king, but not yet. There's things that need to take place first. God chose David because of what is in his heart. And although it wasn't initially evident by those around him, just by his outward appearances, David's heart begins to be on display as he demonstrates courageous trust in God. Last week, we talked about how he fought this battle with the giant Goliath, the warrior, who David trusted in God and went up, and God gave him into David's hand. So David knew that his battles would not be won by his own strength, but that the battle belongs to the Lord. And so as David runs out to meet his enemies head on, the Lord provides the victories. So David knows that God will defeat his enemies in God's time, as he trusts and as he obeys. So this week, we find out there's something different in David's heart as well. In the heart of this warrior king. God describes David this way. In Acts, we read, "I have found David, son of Jesse, a man after my own heart. He will do everything I want him to do." So David not only displays this courageous trust, but today we see that David is willing to do everything that God wants him to do, including to wait. We all know it's hard to wait, particularly when we feel we're right or when we feel it's time to move. You know, sometimes waiting feels unproductive, right? Feels like we should be accomplishing something. We should be doing something. Just waiting is like nothing's happening. And yet, under the surface, we don't always see what God is accomplishing while we wait. So today we jump ahead into the life of David to wait on the Lord. In 1 Samuel 24, we read that David has been fleeing King Saul throughout the wilderness because Saul's trying to kill him now. The tormented king knows that David is in line for the throne, that God is tearing that kingdom away from him and giving it over to David. So David has been on the run from Saul for months and months, and he's ruthlessly hunted down. He's outnumbered. And he has barely escaped Saul's murderous patrols countless times. And then an unexpected opportunity presents itself for David. He can end this once and for all as King Saul miraculously comes within David's grasp. David could stop running. He could stop hiding. He could get rid of this relentless threat all by simply reaching out and taking Saul's life. So what does David do? In 1 Samuel 24, we read, "After Saul returned from pursuing the Philistines that were the enemies of Israel, he was told, 'David is in the desert of En-Gedi.' So Saul took 3,000 able young men from all Israel and set out to look for David and his men near the crags of the wild goats. He came to the sheep pens along the way. A cave was there, and Saul went in to relieve himself. David and his men were far back in the cave. The men said, 'This is the day the Lord spoke of when he said to you, I will give your enemy into your hands for you to deal with as you wish.'" So here it is. They're in the back of this cave. Saul's in there to relieve himself. No one knows. He doesn't know anyone else is there. and David creeps up. Should David act right now or not? What would you do? To answer these questions, we kind of have to go back in the story. You know, if we remember this fall, we were reading the Community Bible Experience, and one of the things we learned as we're reading the Bible is that we need to understand the context with which these stories are written. What kind of a book is this 1 and 2 Samuel? And so for us, as we're reading this, we recognize that this is Old Testament kind of historical literature, or it's a Old Testament narrative. And so as we look at this, we have to understand it as the story of David's life, and specifically it's speaking about some of the characteristics of David's life. One is that this is a man after God's own heart. After David defeated Goliath, Saul took him into his house and he kept his eye on him. He was made commander in Saul's army, and God gave David success in all the little battles that he went out and ran. And the more God gave David success, of course, the more Saul became jealous and afraid of David. In fact, it says earlier on, in everything David did, he had great success because the Lord was with him. And when Saul saw how successful he was afraid of him. So Saul already knows that David has been chosen. He's going to succeed him, but the Spirit of God has gone upon David, has been taken away from Saul, but Saul's not going to give up the throne willingly. In fact, his son Jonathan has made a covenant or a promise with David to be his friend and actually to support him as king, and this just angers Saul all the more, and he's tormented, Saul is, in his soul. In 1 Samuel 23, we read, "And Saul's son Jonathan went to David at Horesh and helped him find strength in God. 'Don't be afraid,' he said. 'My father Saul will not lay a hand on you. You will be king over Israel, and I will be second to you. Even my father Saul knows this.'" So everybody knows what's going to happen, except Saul's not willing to allow it to. And though Saul has tried to kill David several times, he's tried to throw a spear at him and pin him to the wall, David continually escapes, time after time. But David has to go on the run. So he's ruthlessly hunted all across Israel, and he gathers around him some discontented men. There's about 600 of them in all, and they gather around David and are with him. David has almost been caught. He narrowly escapes until now. And finally, now, Saul, unaware, wanders into this cave where David and his men are hiding, into David's hands. What will David do? What will it cost David to wait on the Lord? Again, God has promised him the kingdom. He has been anointed. He has proven his ability as a courageous warrior. He has demonstrated his loyalty to Saul, only to be hunted down. He's running for months and months. Saul won't stop pursuing him no matter what. If he doesn't act now, that means he's going to have to continue to run. He's going to have to continue to face these threats, continue to be in danger. People will continue to get killed around him, and Saul won't stop pursuing him until one of them are dead. Is this time for David to act, or time for David to wait? What does the man after God's own heart do in this situation? What would you do? Well, David and his men are back in the cave, and Saul comes along to relieve himself, to go to the bathroom. It's unbelievable, but this is what it says. He's unaware anyone is there. And we continue in the story in chapter 24. Then David crept up unnoticed and cut off a corner of Saul's robe. Afterward, David was conscience-stricken for having cut off a corner of his robe. This is a kind of a significant saying. The robe represents the royalty, so by cutting a piece off, it's like he's transferring that authority to himself. And so he said to his men, "The Lord forbid that I should do such a thing to my master, the Lord's anointed, or lay my hand on him, for he is the anointed of the Lord." With these words, David sharply rebuked his men and did not allow them to attack Saul. And Saul left the cave and went on his way. Then David went out of the cave and called out to Saul, "My lord, the king, When Saul looked behind him, David bowed down and prostrated himself with his face to the ground. He said to Saul, "Why do you listen when men say David is bent on harming you? This day you have seen with your own eyes how the Lord delivered you into my hands in the cave. Some urged me to kill you, but I spared you. I said, I will not lay my hand on my Lord, because he is the Lord's anointed. See, my father, look at this piece of your robe in my hand. I cut off the corner of your robe, but did not kill you. See that there is nothing in my hand to indicate that I am guilty of wrongdoing or rebellion. I have not wronged you, but you are hunting me down to take my life. May the Lord judge between you and me, and may the Lord avenge the wrongs you have done to me, but my hand will not touch you. As the old saying goes, from evildoers come evil deeds, so my hand will not touch you." When David finished saying this, Saul asked, "Is that your voice, David, my son?" And he wept aloud. "You are more righteous than I. You have treated me well, but I have treated you badly. You have just now told me about the good you did to me. The Lord delivered me into your hands, but you did not kill me. When a man finds his enemy, does he let him get away unharmed? May the Lord reward you well for the way you treated me today. I know that you will surely be king and that the kingdom of Israel will be established in your hands." Then Saul returned home, but David and his men went up to the stronghold. David could have ended Saul's life right there, no problem. He could have ended all this pursuing and running and all the wrongs even done to him, but he wouldn't. David made the choice to wait for the Lord, to wait on the Lord to make things right. He said, "And may the Lord avenge the wrongs you have done to me, but my hand will not touch you. From evildoers come evil deeds, so my hand will not touch you." David refuses to make things right by doing evil. He chooses to wait for the Lord. And I think that's key for us. God's not looking for an expedient heart in you and I. God is looking for an obedient heart. Some of us here today might be struggling with waiting on the Lord. Maybe you want to take things into your own hands and make things right. We might feel so sure that God is giving us the go-ahead to make things happen that we're pushing just a little too hard, or maybe we're applying a little more force than we ought, or maybe we're running a little too far ahead of God's perfect timing. You might even have other people telling you to be expedient, that if someone is harmed in the process, that's just the casualty of being right. You and I need to be careful. Obedience requires waiting on the Lord. If we don't, something could end up being an untimely disaster instead of being a great blessing in its time. So what does waiting cost? What does it cost David? Actually, David is spared doing evil by killing Saul, and so then everything turns out all right. Right? Saul stops chasing David and everything's going great from that point. Well, it's not quite that easy, as these stories always show. Saul stops chasing him for a while. Then he picks up the chase again and he resumes the hunt to kill David. So for David, waiting on the Lord means continuing in this hardship, in this cycle of threats. David has another chance later on to take revenge on Saul and kill him, but he spares his life one more time. And in a conversation similar to the one that we just heard in the cave of En-Gedi, David reveals his heart. But David said to Abishai, "Don't destroy him. Who can lay a hand on the Lord's anointed and be guiltless? As surely as the Lord lives," he said, "the Lord himself will strike him down." He's talking about Saul. "Or his time will come, or he will die, or he'll go into battle and perish. But the Lord forbid that I should lay my hand on the Lord's anointed." So David trusts that the Lord himself is going to take care of Saul, is going to take care of the situation on David's behalf. Either he'll strike him down, or Saul will die in battle, or he'll just die in some way. But David will be spared from doing this evil of killing Saul. So you and I are not excused from doing wrong in order to get things done. Our character matters. And trusting in the Lord often means waiting on the Lord's timing. Are you in that place today, struggling to wait on the Lord? Then we're encouraged to ask for patience, to trust in God's timing. Embrace God's word for you and I that says, those who wait on the Lord will renew their strength. They shall mount up on wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. You know, there will be times when you and I make conscious choices to wait on the Lord, when we just sense, we know that the timing is not quite right. But there are other times that the Lord sends people in our path, and we need to listen to them before we do something that's out of line with God's heart. So my encouragement to myself as well is not to get too confident that we're always going to know the Lord's timing. Even David, after he had been all through all this, he was about to make a huge mistake. You know, earlier in the worship service, we read about Nabal and his wife Abigail. You know, David had been wandering in the wilderness, in the desert, and while his men were there, they had protected Nabal and his property and his herds. And now David asked Nabal to simply supply him with some of the needs for the favor that they had given to Nabal's shepherds. But Nabal refused to help David. And so David's angry. You ever feel that way? I deserve this, right? It's not right. And so David feels slighted, and he needs supplies, and he feels justified in his cause, and he's about to take vengeance on Nabal. His intentions turn dark, very uncharacteristic of David. He says, may God deal with David, be it ever so severely, if by morning I leave alive one male of all who belong to him. In other words, David intends on killing Nabal and his servants and his family to wipe him out. Even after all that David has faced, trusting God to this point, now he's about to lose everything if he follows through with these intentions. And there seems to be no one to put a stop to it. Then God sends an unlikely hero, Abigail. She comes to David with gifts, and she tells him, forget Nabal. Nabal's a fool. She continues, she's talking about David. When the Lord has fulfilled for my Lord every good thing he promised concerning him and has appointed him ruler over Israel, my Lord will not have on his conscience the staggering burden of needless bloodshed of having avenged himself. David said to Abigail, praise be to the Lord, the God of Israel, who has sent you to meet me today. May you be blessed for your good judgment and for keeping me from bloodshed this day and from avenging myself with my own hands. Otherwise, as surely as the Lord, the God of Israel, lives, who has kept me from harming you, if you had not come quickly to meet me, not one male belonging to Nabal would have been left alive by daybreak. In the moment, that drastic action that David was contemplating seemed justifiable. Yet, it would have taken him far from God's purpose for his life. And the Lord intervened by sending Abigail to turn David back to God's purposes. Is God sending someone into your path with a word of caution? Are you listening to what they have to say to you? So what about Nabal? He's a vile, foolish man who cheated David. 10 days after the encounter, the Lord struck him down, and he died of natural causes, and everything that he had became David's. David never lifted a finger against him. What about King Saul as we think about this story? You know, David spared his life. To what end? Well, David waited on the Lord to deal with the king whose kingdom he would tear away. And in the end, Saul took his own life on the battlefield, and David was innocent of Saul's blood. The Lord is watching out for David. God testified concerning him, I have found David, son of Jesse, a man after my own heart. He will do everything I want him to do. What about you and I? Are we willing, like David, to do everything God wants us to do, even when it means waiting. Be patient. God's timing is perfect.